Good morning. It's Wednesday already, February 14th. If you didn't know, that's Valentine's Day. Whoops. Oh. Better get to the store quick. GM going to the middle, world's largest supercharger and radio flyer. Yes, the wagon company. I love that last one. We'll save the best for last.
This is a good show. Like, just so you know, if you're already listening and you're like, I don't know if I want to like stay for the whole thing today. Stay for the whole thing. Every single one just feels really good to me.
So. I wonder if there's anybody out there that was just like, crap, it's Thanksgiving. I mean, it's Valentine's Day.
Right, like turned it off. That. Like,
you know, we have an unspoken rule. I mean, maybe it's more of a spoken rule, Sarah and I, that like Valentine's Day isn't going to be like a holiday that we celebrate. I don't know if it's really a holiday. Because corporate America can't tell me when to express love to
you. You can't tell me when to get flowers and gift cards and all that stuff.
However, I did like 1 year, I totally just didn't even mention it, didn't even bring it up. And with all the other stuff going around, I realized maybe that was still a little bit of a mistake. So now I've like reverted back to like a very like kind of mild version of that. Yeah. So like this morning that included a note. A handwritten note to Sarah and my two daughters, each got their own note, and a little Valentine's Day cupcake on the counter, and thoughtful, acknowledging,
man,
Steve, over.
It's already making the rest of us look bad, Paul.
I'm going to send this episode to my wife to make sure she gathers the children and they listen to it.
Gather round. I
wrote the notes on a plane, on a flight back from Orlando yesterday, and there was turbulence. So the notes are they're extra special. Let's just say it that way.
Fully handwritten, not with an AI. Yeah. Absolutely.
No, not at all. Hey, we have a few extra special things going on right now. One we can't really talk about, but I mean, AsotaCon, 90 days. 90 days away from AsotaCon, everybody. It's time to get your tickets. If you want to be a partner, like spots are filling up. So if you want to be a part of it and get like a booth or sponsor some of the cool thing activations we have going on, now's the time to bring it up because it's not going to get any more available as time goes on. We have tons of speakers, tons of content. Will Goddard is our keynote, author of Unreasonable Hospitality. WOCAN, Women of Color Automotive Network, is doing a special breakfast event on May 15th before the show starts. So everyone, you know, can be a part of that if you're in that community. Also, we can't talk about the last thing, but there's a real fun one that we're talking about, just bringing the dealers closer to the event, which makes everybody happy.
It's always good. Yes.
All right. Also,
hey, you got to talk about next week.
Next week.
This one's good.
It's been a while, right? I feel like, since we've done a webinar. Maybe it's because the
NADA and the whole thing. Yeah, I love our webinars.
They are. Well, first of all, the format. Right?
Right. Yeah.
Quick shot webinar. There's no 50 minutes of someone going on and on. Actually 20 to 30 minutes. It's heavily curated. Kyle and I show up. We kind of just spark a conversation. We make sure that there's a great linear narrative that goes through. We take questions from the audience and we always have learn a lot and have some fun. And we're out in like 20, 25 minutes. This one's going to be February 21st. So a week from today. At 1 p.m. Eastern, so circle the time on your date. We're going to be with Upstart Auto Retail talking about bridging the digital divide, sharing data from a 100-dealer survey they conducted, including questions like, what's been your biggest challenge in 23? How advanced is your online and in-store experience? And what's been your biggest challenge with financing? So every dealer wants to know.
Topic. That's a hot topic.
The financing right one? There. No kidding. I feel like every conversation involves a finance nuance to it now.
Absolutely right now. Affordability and finance, interest rates, keywords.
Yep.
Dropping bombs.
Yeah. Hey, just want to say hello to everybody on the live stream. Some new friend from Techion showing up in the live stream this morning. If you're just listening on the podcast version, we do live stream the show every morning from LinkedIn, X, Twitter, whatever, YouTube. And if you just watch the live stream, we have the audio version so you don't miss an episode on Apple Music and Spotify and all the other things. So just want to say hello. Eddie Del Toro, we're looking at you this morning. All right, talk about some news.
Let's get into
Shall we? Speaking of NADA, during their private meeting at this year's NADA show, GM has signaled a strategic pivot back to plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. I know we talked about this a little bit, but there's a little more insider nuance to this one from the Ward's Automotive article. Dealers are excited about this. GM announced their plans to reintroduce PHEVs, partial hybrid electric vehicles, in the U.S., aiming to bridge the gap between combustion engines and the future of all electric vehicle, as opposed to a similar meeting a few years back, their make meeting, where a big group of Buick dealers stood up and walked out. Do you remember that? That was the thing. The Buick dealer stood up and they're like, we're out of here. It wasn't like that. It was a real positive tone, according to some people at the meeting this year, saying, hey, we're bringing these. We have experience with these vehicles overseas. We're bringing them back because the EPA mandates are, you know, locking down and going to effect. And earlier in the week at the J.D. Power Summit, before their make meeting, GM President Mark Roos said, you know, PHEVs are still two powertrains in one car. He said they're complicated and expensive to make. But he said on the plus side, regulators treat them the same as they do EVs. One dealer, Donald Hicks, told Ward's Auto in the article, the market is going to tell us what it will buy. The government can tell us what we have to build, but the market will tell us what we can sell. It's that simple. Nobody is bigger than the market.
Wow. Not even the government. Nobody's bigger than the market. Put that on a shirt and sell it.
Yes.
Hey, look, here's what I love about this strategy, because obviously I'm a big fan of hybrids.
Yep. You drive one.
Yeah, we drive one in the house. I think that, you know, just the gas mileage that you can get out of it. But what a plug-in hybrid does for like making the next step is saying, okay, we need to get people used to plugging in their vehicle, setting up chargers, being aware of the charger network without having to be completely reliant on it. And that's what I think that's like a really logical next step, because you still force a charger network to happen. You still force people to understand what that looks like in their home, but they don't become absolutely reliant on it. So it's like, it's the training middle ground to moving to an EV future. Yeah. So kudos to GM for making that kind of like, the going back to ground to root on that.
I mean, I would say you don't force it, you encourage it.
Yep.
Right. It's like there's a real benefit to the gas savings, right? If you plug it in at your house and then you don't have to, especially if you're driving short ranges, you might never have to go to a gas station unless you're taking a long trip. I was just in Orlando and I rented a Ford Mach-E. And I have to say, man, the driving experience of an EV is freaking awesome. I had so much fun driving that car.
Zippy.
It's so zippy. It's balanced. It's quiet. The center of gravity is low. I was like, man, it's far superior. It is far superior in my opinion. But I'll tell you what, when I watched that charging indicator going down, I was like,
where am I going
to
go?
I just made sure I didn't drive enough miles to have to charge it is what I did. That was my strategy. But there's a fun thing about watching, I don't know if it's fun, but watching the battery indicator as a percentage.
Yeah.
Right. Knowing, I mean, because like we're just used to it on our phones and everything, and it's a lot easier than reading the fuel gauge. I don't know. I was excited about it. I still don't own one, but I'll rent one when I have to drive less than 240 miles. Speaking of charging vehicles,
stop. Yep.
Segway.
Time.
Lots of them.
I feel like it's been time for an iteration on the charging station, and now Tesla's planning the construction of the world's largest supercharging station in, of course, California. Contributing some fresh ideas to the future of EV infrastructure, the new supercharger station will feature 160 charging stalls, becoming the largest of its kind globally, and will be located in Kern County near the intersection of the number five freeway and the 46 highway. So in addition to the array of chargers lined up like we're kind of used to seeing them, they're also featuring 16 pull-through charging stalls. So that if an EV is towing a trailer, right, and obviously with the Cybertruck out, Tesla is incentivized to do that more. So if someone's towing a trailer, you don't have to unhook it. You can pull in the stall, park there for 20 minutes, and then you're gone. And Tesla is also another innovation, incorporating a microgrid at the actual site, including battery banks and solar canopies over all the chargers. So they say this helps them, number one, cut peak demand costs, right? Electricity, when it's very expensive in California. If you're not familiar with peak demand, like up here in the Northeast, we never even think about it. But in California, right, when peak demand period, electric is more expensive. So they're going to be storing energy in the battery banks from the sun, and they're going to use that to charge through.
So,
I mean, it feels like this is like a great step forward.
Yeah, and if you look at, I don't know if we have it, but there's basically a land plot. Like this was, someone found the land plot of what they were looking
at. Yeah, click the link in the show notes. You'll be able to see
it. And if you see that, you can see that there's these like future development areas. There's nothing in the research or the articles right now that states this, But if I had to guess, those are like little micro cities, like little grocery shopping, little food. Little
Jenny's ice cream. We're looking at you.
Jenny's ice cream. We're looking at you. Right. Yeah. So, and also like this is immediately crushes Bucky's, right? Like Bucky's is a small town, little baby gas station compared to this deal. It's like 160.
How many pumps do they have at a Bucky's? I've still never been to one. I have to get to one.
Well, here's what's interesting, because with chargers, it basically takes up the same amount of space as a parking spot. You get a massive new opportunity to have the same or less amount of land get more chargers.
Right, because you don't need all the flow traffic.
Exactly.
You're parking, you're backing out, you're going.
I mean, just like this, you know, I think the future state, this is the proving ground for how does a new just like shopping mall get stood up and just have chargers at every spot, right? Because you don't like the land space needed additional to a parking lot is maybe 2 or 3 feet. It's all underground, right?
Interesting.
You just start to think about like, this is the proving case for how do we scale this out into every parking lot, because it proves the thesis of like,
you
we
also, can 160 not, now that Kyle and I are playing amateur, you know, site developers, you also don't need the required flow through and space for fuel trucks.
Right.
Right. Because like, there's no more movement of like big fuel tankers in to fill up. And I don't know. I don't average Bucky's. Oh, Nathan, our producer, is putting it in the notes. Average Bucky's has 100 gas pumps.
Yeah. They're almost doubling that thing.
Okay.
Okay. Overnight.
All right. Here we go. Speaking of things that weren't built overnight.
Stop. Not built. Segway.
Not even close. Iconic brand, though.
If I say Radio Flyer and your brain doesn't immediately feel nostalgic, easy, your heart do a little thing, I don't know what's up, but it is an iconic brand known for its red wagons, and it opened its first store now in Chicago with a unique racetrack for kids to test drive products. So the new store is in the Woodfield Mall. It includes an adult-sized wagon that you can just sit down in like you're a kid again, a racetrack for product testing, and aims to reignite the joy of play for both children and adults. The move comes from, they must have been listening to the pod, Paul.
I think they're big fans over there.
It's a response to online shopping fatigue, offering a full-on experiential shopping experience that blends, wait for it, retail with entertainment, fostering interactions between the brand and its customers. There's a little bit of safety insurance question mark.
Not amongst any Gen Z parents.
No, I mean,
Gen X parents.
Right.
We're like anybody Gen X and older, like, yeah, they'll fall. It'll be fine.
There's been a birthday party event at the place. It's a screen-free environment. And
that's amazing, right?
That's amazing, actually. It is because everywhere has screens, right? I'm like, let's go. We're gonna do it. Like,
we are. Where's this at? Chicago. On inbound. Yeah.
Inbound. So the chief wagon officer, love that, Robert Passon, emphasized the experimental and adaptive approach. Said, when we're in the store, we're wearing a red T-shirt, but we're really wearing a white lab coat.
Hey, I like this so much.
This is our dude, you know?
I mean, so I think that automotive can definitely take a couple of cues from this, right? Because there are a lot of nostalgic automotive brands. But Radio Flyer has, I think, understood. And if you look at pictures of the store, it's awesome. I totally want to go there. Between the test track, the screen-free environment, the way they have the products merchandised on the walls, I didn't realize Radio Flyer had so many things, because I just think wagons and maybe some of those little new contraptions that you put a kid on where you can push them or pull them. Nope, they have scooters. They have like little Tesla four-wheelers. They have things that go on their own like pretty quickly. So I think Radio Flyer could definitely be this could be a big pivot in coming from iconic brand known for one thing and showing people like, yo, we've been innovating for years and we are still I just think of the goggles and I think of the scarf and where you're on a Radio Flyer, right? You're in another world. So I like it. And I think, like, again, back to the dealership side, dealers have space to build like little test tracks, little car. Like, dude, buy some Radio Flyers already.
Why not? It's going to be in cultural news. Like, that is you know, it's just like core. It's that thing that gets
you way sell down cars, deep. You sell transportation. Like, I can't think of a better way to keep some kids busy.
There you go. Think about freedom.
Here we go.
In a radio flyer. That's freedom.
It is. Goggles, scarf, all that stuff. Well, there you go. We hope we prided you a little freedom today. Freedom mostly to just think outside the box and think of how you can serve your customers, grow your business, love people more than cars. We will see you here tomorrow when it's not Valentine's Day.